All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman. Today, we're going to be talking about the Falcons, talking to Deion Jones about a contract extension, the Matt Schaub contract, as well as the Falcons' free agency plans.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me, Aaron Freeman, founder of FalFans.com, on Twitter, at FalFans, and of course, the host of Locked On Falcons, this illustrious podcast that you are now listening to. Today, we're going to be talking about the news that the Falcons have begun talks with middle linebacker Deion Jones about a contract extension heading into Jones's final year of his contract per ESPN's Vaughn McClure. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the initial details of the Matt Schaub contract. And we'll sort of talk about the Falcons' free agency plans and look sort of at their salary cap and how it's going to dictate sort of what they do in free agency and sort of my expectations because, you know, Monday the legal tampering period kicks off and we're going to start hearing big names moving around. And, you know, spoiler alert, you're probably not going to hear the Falcons connected to any of those big names. And we'll talk about some of the reasons why that's going to be. But let's kick things off. Let's talk about Deion Jones possibly getting an extension in the near future. And I think, you know, this is interesting because I think people are sort of reading the wrong lessons in this, in the sense of like, oh, the Falcons are talking to Deion Jones, and that means that they're not going to get a deal done with Grady Jarrett, which I think is just, I don't know, man. The Grady Jarrett takes are weird to me because they're similar kind of to the Julio Jones takes last summer that people were making into making that whole situation into a big deal than it was. Now, granted, as we got the week before training camp started and the reports came out that Julio Jones wasn't going to show up, then it became like, okay, like maybe this was a big deal. And maybe I shouldn't have been making light of this for 2 months. But it feels kind of like that where I think people are like sort of panicking about the whole Grady Jarrett thing. And, you know, to me, my philosophy is, you know, if it becomes a big deal, we'll talk about it when it becomes a big deal. But I don't think it's going to be a big deal until we get to like July 13th or something like that. And he hasn't signed a deal. That's when it becomes a big deal. But with all that being said, let's talk about Deion Jones. Basically, the Deion Jones contract extension isn't going to happen until sometime this summer. It's probably not going to happen until after Grady Jarrett, after Julio Jones get their deals done, if at all. This year. And, you know, the reason for that is because the Falcons really can't sign Deion Jones until they free up more cap space. Right now, Deion Jones's cap hit in 2019 is a little north of $1.4 million. His base salary is a little north of $1 million as part of that. And, you know, the reason why the Falcons need more cap space to be able to sign Deion Jones long term is when you sign guys to these big money extensions like Deion Jones is likely to get, you know, those deals involve big signing bonuses. For example, you look at Luke Kuechly's contract, which averaged over $12 million a year, and his first-year cap hit is of $6.7 million. And a big reason for that was because Luke Kuechly got a $20 million signing bonus as part of his contract extension. And so if you saw Deion get the same signing bonus, that would mean that it would add about $4 million to the Falcons' 2019 salary cap. Because for those of you guys that don't know, signing bonuses are prorated, which means they're averaged out over the life of a contract up to 5 years. So a $20 million signing bonus on a 5-year deal averages about $4 million. So it would add about $4 million to the salary cap. And even if the signing bonus was half that, this hypothetical signing bonus that we're talking about with Deion Jones, it would be like, what, $10 million? And that would still add about $2 million to the Falcons' 2019 cap that they would have to find a way to absorb. And right now, they're just really not in a position to absorb that type of cap hit. So I think basically until the Falcons can create enough space later, which probably won't come until much later in the summer, you're talking about if and when the Falcons decide to make Ryan Schrader a post-June 1 cut, which for those of you guys that don't know, the Falcons can cut Ryan Schrader in the next week or so before the league year starts on next Wednesday, I believe. and make him a post June 1 cut, but they don't eat Ryan Schrader. Basically what that means is he becomes a free agent immediately, but the Falcons don't reap the salary cap savings until June 2nd. So that would create about $6.5 million in cap space. Then the Grady Jarrett deal, which will probably at the earliest get done like the week before July 15th deadline. So somewhere in the middle of July, that could save probably at least a minimum of $5 million against the cap this year. Maximum potentially $8 or $9 million if the Falcons are smart with how they structure that deal. But let's just assume $5 million. And then the Julio deal, who knows what the Julio deal is going to save the Falcons? I have no clue. But just for the sake of argument, we'll say $2 million. So you take 6.5 plus 5 plus 2, you know, that's up to $13.5 million that the Falcons could potentially save going into training camp, going into the season, which will obviously give them more than enough room to absorb whatever additional salary cap hit that they would take if they were able to get Deion Jones signed to a contract extension. But the main reasons why, you know, the Falcons want to start these now is that they basically want to get ahead of this situation so they're not in a predicament similar to this one they currently are with Grady Jarrett, where they have to franchise tag him. Because, you know, last year the Falcons talked to Grady Jarrett during the summer, but then they cut off talks during the season and only really resumed in the last month or so. And just didn't leave them enough time to really hammer out this deal, as I've mentioned a number of times during this week. Is I think the reason why they're far apart isn't because Grady Jarrett is asking for Aaron Donald money. I think he's asking for Fletcher Cox money in terms of guaranteed money. And I don't think the Falcons are willing to give it to him. But again, that's me speculating. That to me seems the most realistic conclusion to have. But, you know, again, people, that's not dramatic enough. That's not a headline grabbing sort of situation. So people are going to go to the panicky places in their minds where they tend to go. But, you know, you look at the franchise tag potentially for Deion Jones in 2020, next offseason, based off of this year's franchise tag, which was about 15.4 something million, it probably would be around 16.5 million, give or take $100,000 here or there next season. And so obviously that would be a significantly limiting factor on the Falcons cap space. If, you know, they had 25 million heading into the offseason and then 16.5 of that gets taken up by another franchise tag. And obviously the issue with that is more pressing next offseason because the Falcons have more guys that are hitting free agency and they want to have as much cap space, as much flexibility as possible to re-sign those guys. Some of those players I'm talking about, Vic Beasley, Matt Bosher, Devontre Campbell, Austin Hooper, Wes Schweitzer, all of these guys are entering contract years this year, which means they're going to be free agents next year. You know, you might also see Keanu Neal on that list. Keanu Neal is expected to hit the fifth-year option this offseason at some point, so he won't be a free agent until the year after that. So 2021 offseason, 2020 is his last year of his contract. So basically, if the Falcons can get a Deion Jones extension done sooner rather than later, it will give them some obvious flexibility in order to make sure that they can re-sign some of those guys. I don't expect all those guys to be re-signed, but at least some of those guys, with probably Hooper being the priority, and then I would guess Bosher and Schweitzer are the two most likely re-signees after that. And then Campbell, and I think Vic Beasley is probably the least likely guy to get re-signed. But yeah, so, you know, in terms of what Deion Jones's contract might look like, we'll talk about that in addition to sort of the terms of Matt Schaub's contract coming up in a moment. But you guys probably are very curious about, you know, who were the standouts at the Combine this past weekend. And of course, you can find out two great podcasts that are giving you all the lowdown, all the scoops firsthand from their experiences in Indianapolis this past weekend on the Locked On Podcast Network. The first podcast is, of course, is the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast with hosts John Ledger and Trevor Sikkema. The second one is the Draft Dudes Podcast with hosts Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs. Find them both wherever you get your Locked On podcasts, as well as at thedraftnetwork.com, your team every day. So quickly, to put a button on the Deion Jones conversation, I think, you know, where his price tag is going to be, my guess is that the floor for Deion Jones is probably like $11 million a year. The ceiling is probably $12.5 to $13 million a year. I don't expect him, you know, right now Luke Kuechly is the highest paid inside linebacker at $12.36 million a year. I think Jamie Collins, who was just cut on today on Wednesday by the Browns, was the highest paid non, you know, outside linebacker, I guess you could say, that isn't a pass rusher, at like 12.4, 12.5 million. Bobby Wagner, I think, is making like 10.7 million or something like that. I think Alec Ogletree is like 10.5. So I expect Deion Jones to come in north of those guys. I don't know if he's going to go north of Luke Kuechly, but I think it's definitely a possibility. We'll have to see particularly how guys who are hitting the open market, you know, in the next couple of days, CJ Mosley from Baltimore, Jordan Hicks from Philadelphia, Quan Alexander, and even Anthony Barr to a certain extent, even though he's not an inside linebacker, he is, you know, an off-ball linebacker. And if he gets paid a lot of money, if he gets a Jamie Collins contract, I think it's going to add fuel to sort of Deion Jones's fire as far as his demands in terms of his pricing. Obviously, the key always with these is more about the guaranteed than the average per year, which, again, I think is why the Grady Jarrett situation hasn't gotten resolved. But, you know, you look at Kuechly's contract, his guaranteed money was north of $27 million. So we'll have to sort of see. I think total guarantees was something in the 30s or something like that. So we'll have to sort of see where Deion Jones prices himself at. I think the good thing for the Falcons is that they can, by trying to sign him coming off a year where he was injured, and rather than waiting for him to recover and have another great season in 2019, as we all expect him to have, it means that they could potentially get a little bit of a bargain. Again, you know, we're talking about the difference between, you know, $11.75 million and $12.5 million per year. And, you know, I don't know, $32 million guaranteed and like $28 million guaranteed. So it's not exactly like they're really saving a ton of money. But it is one of those things where, like, if they can sort of pinch, you know, a couple million here or there that they don't have to spend over the next couple of years on Deion Jones, I think will certainly add up along with other contracts potentially. So that's sort of my expectation. Again, we'll have to wait until July or August before that gets done, but certainly something to keep an eye on. So when we see those contract terms, definitely you want to pay attention to guys like CJ Mosley and Jordan Hicks and Alexander and Barr to see what, if they push the market significantly forward this offseason as far as that goes, because basically Deion Jones and his agent are going to be looking at those deals. If one of those guys, basically if one of those guys gets $12 million a year, then you can expect Deion Jones to push for, you know, possibly $13 million a year or whatever the case may be. But if those guys are settling for $10 million or $9 million or whatever the case may be, then I think, you know, Deion Jones might have to, quote unquote, settle for $11 million a year or $11.5 million a year. So we'll see how that gets resolved. Let's talk about Matt Schaub's contract. We don't get the exact terms of what his deal was, but Field Yates of ESPN reported it's a two-year, $3.78 million deal with $750,000 guaranteed and a team option for the 2020 season. So it sounds like, again, guesstimating based off of those terms, it sounds like it's structured in a similar way to the Matt Bryant deal, which was basically a series of 3 one-year deals. This Matt Schaub contract sounds like it's a series of 2 one-year deals. So again, guessing that he's probably counting about $1 million against the salary cap this year, and then maybe, I don't know, the difference, 2.7, or probably closer to $1.5 million this year, and then probably the difference a little shy of $2 million in 2020. So, you know, I think this is interesting because, as you guys remember when I talked about this deal on, I guess it was Monday, I guesstimated that it would be like a two-year deal worth $5 to $7 million. So the Falcons getting it for under $4 million and not necessarily being committed beyond this season, I think is a really good negotiation tactic and a really smart on the Falcons' part to get him down to such a low price. And it does a similar situation as we got with Giorgio Tavecchio last year, where Kurt Benkert or some other young quarterback can have the opportunity, if they play well enough this summer, to potentially push Matt Schaub out the door next offseason, where the Falcons basically decide, you know what, we're not going to pick up your option in 2020, and we're going to let you walk, Matt Schaub, making you a free agent, blah, 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 and then let you move on. And, you know, similar to how that bum Giorgio Tavecchio did to my sweet beloved Matt Bryant this offseason. I'm not bitter at all. No, I'm still not resentful over it. But, you know, I think there will be far less out of an outcry if the Falcons did that to Matt Schaub than what they did with Matt Bryant. So we'll see how that gets resolved. We'll come back and wrap things up by talking a little bit about my expectations for what the Falcons offseason is going to pertain. We'll dig deeper into the salary cap and how that may affect certain things in just a moment. But I do want to let you guys know about the NBA side of the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find a daily podcast devoted to all 30 NBA teams, including the Locked On Hawks podcast with my good friend and host, Brad Rowland. Find that wherever you get your Locked On podcast, your team every day. You know, I've long suspected that the Falcons would be pretty chill this offseason. I was curious if the Falcons would, you know, to me, my expectations was this would be a similar offseason to 2017. I was curious to find out if the Falcons would basically try to make a Don Terry Poe-esque splash, similar to what they did that offseason with what limited cap space they have. Currently right now, over the cap has them at $7.67 million in cap space, although they have a little bit more room to spend due to the top 51 rule. I'll explain that in just a moment. But, you know, I've said things, you'll hear me say things that are seemingly contradictory, and certainly at face value, they are very much sound contradictory, where you'll hear me say things like, oh, the Falcons can't afford this, and they don't have enough cap space to do that, or this or that. And then at the same time be like, salary cap's not that big a deal. It's not really an obstacle for teams. And those two statements seem to be very contradictory. But what people need to understand, particularly with that latter statement, it's that statement basically, to clarify, means that teams have as much cap space as they want to have. Like, the salary cap isn't sort of this jail that you can't break out of. It's like a cardboard box. If you want to break out of it, you can. If you just want to hang out in a cardboard box all scrunched up, then you have that choice as well. But it's not really holding you in. And I'll use an example of this. The Jacksonville Jaguars, according to OverTheCap.com, currently are ranked lowest in the league with the least amount of cap space at $2.6 million. But within the next couple of days, they'll start making some roster moves. They'll cut Blake Bortles. They'll cut Malik Jackson. They'll cut Jeremy Parnell. They'll cut Carlos Hyde. There's talk of them shopping Tayshaun Gibson. And if they successfully are able to trade him, those five moves alone will save the Jaguars over $30 million. They'll have, over the cap, $34 million after they make all those moves. So that's what I mean, where like a team like Jacksonville, or really any team in the league, has the opportunity to create as much cap space as they want to. The Falcons could do the same thing. Obviously, they could cut Vic Beasley and save $13 million. They could cut Mohamed Sanu. They could cut Ryan Schrader. They could cut Brandon Fusco. They could go to Matt Ryan and ask him to restructure, Alex Mack to restructure, Desmond Trufant to restructure. Any number of options the Falcons could have. They could have Matt Bosher restructure. They could have Sanu restructure. They could have anything to create as much cap space as they wanted to. Now, obviously, you know, if you're going to cut a whole bunch of guys, you know, you're going to lose something in terms of your players. Obviously, if you're restructuring deals, you're kicking salary cap down the road, and then you're going to have to deal with those consequences down the road, potentially next year or the year after or whatever. So it's not to sit here and say that there aren't consequences to basically this sort of free market system that I'm describing here. But it is one of those situations where, like, if you want to do something, you can. You have the freedom to do so. And so that's what I mean when I say the salary cap isn't really an obstacle for teams. But that being said, the Falcons typically aren't a team that like to do that. When they restructure a deal, like we saw with Brooks Reed, like we saw with Derek Shelby, they're more likely to sort of remove extra years than necessarily sort of push money into future years. They have not really been a team that does that in the Dimitroff era. I don't expect that to really change unless they're in sort of emergency mode, which they aren't in right now. Again, they have $7.67 million in salary cap space. And, you know, they have a little bit more to spend due to the top 51 rule. And basically the top 51 rule is that only the top 51 player, highest paid players on your roster during the offseason, starting March 13th, and will run, I think, through the Monday or Tuesday before the season starts, count towards your salary cap. Obviously, when the season starts, it'll be all 53 players on your roster. But the way that the top 51 rule works is that when you sign a player, and obviously you're allowed to carry up to 90 players during the offseason, so basically 40, almost half of your roster doesn't count towards the salary cap. But basically the way that the top 51 rule works is, currently we'll use an example, a concrete example. Jaden Graham currently is listed as the Falcons' lowest paid player currently on the top 51 roster with a base salary of $495,000. If the Falcons go out and sign a free agent for $1 million, instead of that $1 million counting to full $1 million counting towards their salary cap, what basically that means is that $1 million player comes in and it knocks Jaden Graham off the top 51. He becomes the 52nd highest paid player, and basically his $495,000 doesn't count towards the salary cap anymore. So the reality, what the Falcons are adding to their salary cap is the difference between that $1 million and that $495,000, which is, you do the math, what, $505,000? So they're signing a $1 million player. He counts $1 million against the salary cap, but they're not going to have to count the full weight of that $1 million until September. And in the offseason, they only have to count basically half of that in this specific example. So that's what I mean, where it's like when you see people saying the Falcons have more cap space than that indicator, it's confusing because they have only $7.7 million in cap space, but they have about, you know, roughly about 2 to 4 million, I would guesstimate, 3 to 5 million more to quote unquote spend because of that top 51 room. So they have a little bit more flexibility than that. But, you know, for me, looking at this offseason, I don't really expect the Falcons to really sign more than 3 to 5 players in free agency. You know, I think it's, again, going to be similar to that 2017 offseason where the Falcons signed Jack Crawford, they signed Andre Roberts, Poe, Derek Coleman, and Hugh Thornton, and those were their free agent splashes, if you want to say, and only really Poe and Crawford, you could probably say, were splashes. You know, we saw that offseason where Crawford signed on the first day. Roberts, I think, was day 6 of free agency. Poe was day 8, and Coleman and Thornton were day 13 of that offseason. And, you know, for some of you, like, who the heck is Hugh Thornton? He retired later that offseason, so he never got to play. The Falcons have a habit of signing guards that retire the very next year. I remember they did it with Vince Manuai back in 2012. It's weird. And I want to say they did it with Hunter Goodwin. It was a tight end. But anyway, it happens a lot with the Falcons. Mark Rippon did it as well. It's weird. The Falcons love signing players that don't want to play football anymore. I guess that's just, you know, who's the wide receiver? Lance Moore? Yeah, he did it too. He got that Georgia Heat. One day at Georgia Heat, and he was like, no, I'm good. It's a weird thing that's happened multiple times over the last 15 years. I'm sure it probably happens with other teams. But, you know, what's going to be interesting, you know, the tampering period starts on March 11th, Monday. And then the official free agency starts on Wednesday. And so, you know, as it's been the case the last couple of years, we see a lot of the big name guys get snatched up and we hear a lot about their movement on those first 2 days of the quote unquote legal tampering period, where teams and players are allowed to negotiate with players, but can't officially sign them until Wednesday. And so we haven't really heard the Falcons do much during that tampering period the last couple of years. Other than Alex Mack, I can't really think of a player that we knew starting at the outset of free agency that the Falcons were like definitely going to sign, or at least a big name player. Maybe there was another, like maybe Matt Schaub that same offseason, maybe we knew ahead of time. But for the most part, but what's interesting is that every year the Falcons have signed somebody on the first day of free agency. Like in 2015, it was what, Brooks Reed and Justin Durant. In 2016, it was Mack, Schaub and somebody else. 2017, it was Jack Crawford. 2018, who was it last year? I think it was Fusco. So every year, the Falcons have sort of snuck some sort of mid-level signing for the most part, with the exception of Mack, who wouldn't qualify as a mid-level signing, but sort of has snuck some mid-level signing under the radar as far as we're concerned. And, you know, I don't see any reason to think that that trend won't continue into 2019 because, again, I think probably your best case scenario is the Falcons' biggest quote unquote splash this offseason is going to be sort of that mid-level signing in the same vein as a Jack Crawford, as a Brandon Fusco, as a Justin Durant. someone who's going to make, you know, $3-4 million a year, and that's about it. You know, maybe get, you know, a 3 or 4 year deal to sort of be a starter. And I suspect that would be either a D tackle, either a guard. I'm trying to think. You know, there's a long shot possibility. It's a tight end, someone like a Nick Boyle, but I think Nick Boyle is going to make more money than that. Trying to think, any other positions? No, I think that's probably about it. Someone who blocks or someone who beats blocks for a living is more the most likely move I sort of expect the Falcons to make at that time. So we'll have to see who it is. You know, my strongest suspicion for the quote-unquote splash move that the Falcons can make, I've said this before, you know, if they add a third pass rusher, sort of, you know, to basically be the new Dwight Freeney, I could see them adding someone like a Cameron Wake. That would be a quote-unquote splash that probably wouldn't cost a whole lot of money because I expect Wake's to probably – I think someone could be able to snag Wake on like a one-year $5 million deal. But that would eat up a sizable portion of the Falcons' remaining cap space. So if they did do that, then that would basically sort of rule them out to make any other major moves this offseason. I mean, at least in terms of free agency. And then you probably just see a bunch of sort of like guys signing for the veteran minimum, which would more than likely be some of their own guys and some guys off the street, like an Andre Roberts, like a Derek Coleman types of signings. I could also sort of see them going after a D-tackle like Malcolm Brown for the Patriots. But I don't know what Malcolm Brown's market is going to be because like part of me is like, oh, he'll get $5 million a year. Part of me is he'll get like $7 million a year. I can't really see him getting more than – I mean, I shouldn't say I can't really see it. I don't expect him to get more than that, but you never know if free agency guys get paid a lot more money than you often think they will. So we'll have to sort of see how that goes. Other than that, like, you know, I'm at a loss to sort of find candidates for the Falcons to sign that are going to be splashy. It's going to probably be more like guys like Kevin Pamphile who'll sign like a 2 year, $6 million deal or something like that. Or lower than that or something like that. Like those to me are sort of like the types of moves that the Falcons may wind up making. So, you know, I say that now because, you know, next week people are going to be up in arms and you're going to watch people if you're on social media or wherever you guys interact with your fellow Falcon fans, you're going to see people ticked off that the Falcons aren't signing this guy or aren't signing this guy. Why did they let this guy go? And a lot of that resentment is going to go towards Vic Beasley because people are going to look at him and like, you're the $13 million that we're paying you is preventing us from signing this guy or that guy to really help our team. So it's not going to help Vic Beasley make new friends this season. So basically he's going to be public enemy number one in Atlanta, I think, for a lot of fans this season. So, you know, for Vic Beasley's sake, I hope he has a better season so he can get some of that pressure off of him. But as you probably can guess, not overly optimistic that that's going to happen. I think it's possible, as I've outlined a number of times, but I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, yeah, Vic Beasley's definitely going to have 10 sacks this year. I think he could have 10 sacks. I wanted to make that clear. I don't want anybody coming at me because saying like, Aaron, you said he was going to have 10 sacks this year. I said he could have 10 sacks this year. I'm not saying he will have 10 sacks this year. Please, I don't need that Vic Beasley heat. That's what I'm basically saying. So that's sort of my overriding expectations for next week. You know, we'll get some moves. They probably won't be that sexy. And people will sort of be upset as they are every offseason. I don't know why you guys, and I know many of you guys listening to this podcast aren't in the you guys that I'm talking about, but you know, the people out there, I don't understand why you guys get fooled every single year thinking the Falcons are going to go out there and win the offseason. You know, it's just one of those things where it's like, oh, what's the thing that the Falcons will do that won't get fans excited? Oh, that's the thing that they're going to do. So, like, that's how you just have to approach it. You know, I say set your expectations low, and no one listens to me. They just think I'm being negative just to, for the sake of being negative. And then, you know, I wind up being right, and it's like, huh, that's weird. It's weird how that works that out. Weird how I constantly get everything right. I'm kidding. I, you know, I got it. it's the end of the show. I don't have much else to say, so I'm just messing around. But yeah, that's where we'll leave it. We'll have more to talk about with the Falcons not doing anything next week. But tomorrow we can do a Q&A. So if you have any questions, if you want to vent a little, by all means, I'm ready to hear that. And I know I promised that I would get the leftover mailbag up this week. There has been a slight delay due to some technical issues with FileFans.com that I'm hoping I can get settled. But it's always something with this website. So that will be punted a little bit. So we'll just stick to the regular show. And if you want to send in your questions, you can do so on Twitter or Facebook. Locked On Falcons is the name of both of those social media pages. If you prefer email, LockedOnFalcons@mail.com is the place to send that. And I wish I could tell you could leave a comment on FileFans.com, but right now, as I'm recording this, you can't. And so, when you can leave a comment on FileFans.com where the podcast is posted daily. So, there you have it, guys. Until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team. Every day.